Another several hours pointless driving, and by now Town hated the GPS almost as much as he hated Shadow. There was no passion in the hate, though. He had thought finding his way to the farm, to the Great Silver Ash Tree, had been hard. Finding his way away from the farm was much harder. It did not seem to matter which road he took, which direction he drove down the narrow country lanes, the twisting Virginia backroads, which must have begun, he was sure, as deer trails and cow paths. Eventually he would find himself passing the farm once more and the hand-painted sign, Ash. This was crazy, wasn't it? He simply had to retrace his way, take a left turn for every right he had taken on his way here, a right turn for every left. Only that was what he had done last time, and now here he was, back at the farm once more. There were heavy storm clouds coming in. It was getting dark fast. It felt like night, not morning, and he had a long drive ahead of him. He would never get to Chattanooga before afternoon at this rate. His cell phone gave him only a no-service message. The fold-out map in the car's glove compartment showed the main roads, all the interstates and the real highways, but as far as it was concerned, nothing else existed. Nor was there anyone around that he could ask. The houses were set back from the roads, there were no welcoming lights. Now the fuel gauge was nudging empty. He heard a rumble of distant thunder, and a single drop of rain splashed heavily onto his windshield. So when Town saw the woman walking along the side of the road, he found himself smiling involuntarily.
"Thank God,"
he said aloud, and he drew up beside her. He thumbed down her window.
"Ma'am, I'm sorry, I'm kind of lost. Can you tell me how to get to Highway 81 from here?"
She looked at him through the open passenger side window and said,
"You know, I don't think I can explain it, but I can show you if you like."
She was pale, and her wet hair was long and dark.
"Climb in."
He didn't even hesitate.
"First thing, we need to buy some gas."
"Thanks, I needed a ride."
She got in. Her eyes were astonishingly blue.
"There's a stick here on the seat."
"Just throw it in the back." "Where are you heading?" "Lady, if you can get me to a gas station and back to a freeway, I'll take you all the way to your own front door."
"Thank you, but I think I'm going further than you are. If you can get me to the freeway, that will be fine. Maybe a trucker will give me a ride."
And she smiled, a crooked, determined smile. It was the smile that did it.
"Ma'am, I can give you a finer ride than any trucker."
He could smell her perfume. It was heady and heavy, a cloying scent, like magnolias or lilacs, but he did not mind.
"I'm going to Georgia. It's a long way."
"I'm going to Chattanooga. I'll take you as far as I can."
"What's your name?"
"They call me Mac,"
said Mr. Town. When he was talking to women in bars, he would sometimes follow that up with,
"And the ones that know me really well call me Big Mac."
That could wait. They would have many hours in each other's company to get to know each other after all.
"What's yours?"
"Laura."
"Well, Laura,"
he said,
"I'm sure we're going to be great friends."
The fat kid found Mr. World in the Rainbow Room, a walled section of the path, its window glass covered in clear plastic sheets of green and red and yellow film. He was walking impatiently from window to window, staring out in turn at a golden world, a red world, a green world. His hair was reddish-orange and close-cropped to his skull. He wore a Burberry raincoat. The fat kid coughed. Mr. World looked up.
"Excuse me, Mr. World?"
"Yes, is everything on schedule?"
The fat kid's mouth was dry. He licked his lips and said,
"I've set up everything. I don't have confirmation on the choppers."
"The helicopters will be here when we need them."
"Good. Good."
He stood there, not saying anything, not going away. There was a bruise on his forehead.
"Is there anything else I can do for you?"
A pause. The boy swallowed and nodded.
"Something else?"
he said.
"Yes."
"Would you feel more comfortable discussing it in private?"
The boy nodded again. Mr. World walked with the kid back to his operations center, a damp cave containing a diorama of drunken pixies making moonshine with a still. A sign outside warned tourists away during renovations. The two men sat down on plastic chairs.
How can I help you?
Yes, okay. Right, two things, okay? One, what are we waiting for? And two is harder. Look, we have the guns, right? We have the firepower. They have fucking swords and knives and fucking hammers and stone axes and, like, tire irons. We have fucking smart bombs.
Which we will not be using.
I know that. You said that already. I know that. And that's doable. But, look, ever since I did the job on that bitch in L.A., I've been...
He stopped, made a face, seemed unwilling to go on.
You've been troubled?
Yes. Good word, troubled. Yes, like a home for troubled teens. Funny. Yes.
And what exactly is troubling you?
Well, we fight, we win.
And that is a source of trouble? I find it a matter of triumph and delight, myself.
But they'll die out anyway. They are passenger pigeons and thylacines. Yes? Who cares? This way, it's going to be a bloodbath. If we just wait them out, we get the whole thing.
Ah.
Mr. World nodded. He was following. That was good.
Look, I'm not the only one who feels this way. I've checked with the crew at Radio Modern, and they're all for settling this peacefully, and the intangibles are pretty much in favor of letting market forces take care of it. I'm being, you know, the voice of reason here.
You are indeed. Unfortunately, there is information you do not have.
The smile that followed was twisted and scarred. The boy blinked. He said,
Mr. World, what happened to your lips?
World sighed.
The truth of the matter is that somebody sewed them together a long time ago.
Whoa. Serious omerta shit.
Yes. You want to know what we're waiting for? Why we didn't strike last night?
The fat kid nodded. He was sweating, but it was a cold sweat.
We didn't strike yet, because I'm waiting for a stick.
A stick?
That's right, a stick. And do you know what I'm going to do with the stick?
Okay, I'll bite. What?
I could tell you,
said Mr. World soberly.
But then I'd have to kill you.
He winked, and the tension in the room evaporated. The fat kid began to giggle, a low, snuffling laugh in the back of his throat and in his nose.
Okay. Okay. Got it. Message received on Planet Technical. Loud and clear. Ixnay on the Estians Quay.
Mr. World shook his head. He rested a hand on the fat kid's shoulder.
Hey, you really want to know?
Sure.
Well, seeing that we're friends, here's the answer. I'm going to take the stick, and I'm going to throw it over the armies as they come together. As I throw it, it will become a spear. And then, as the spear arcs over the battle, I'm going to shout, I dedicate this battle to Odin.
Huh? Why?
Power. And food. A combination of the two. You see, the outcome of the battle is unimportant. What matters is the chaos and the slaughter.
I don't get it.
Let me show you. It'll be just like this. Watch.
He took the wooden-bladed hunter's knife from the pocket of his Burberry, and in one fluid movement he slipped the blade of it into the soft flesh beneath the fat kid's chin and pushed hard upward toward the brain.
I dedicate this death to Odin,
he said as the knife sank in. There was a leakage onto his hand of something that was not actually blood, and a sputtering, sparking noise behind the fat kid's eyes. The smell on the air was that of burning insulation wire, as if somewhere a plug was overloading. The fat kid's hand twitched spastically, and then he fell. The expression on his face was one of puzzlement and misery.
Look at him,
said Mr. World conversationally to the air.
He looks as if he just saw a sequence of zeros and ones turn into a cluster of brightly colored birds, and then just fly away.